everybody.
Oh, that's painful. That's painful.
I guess we might as well get started. Just before I introduce today's speaker, I'd like to thank all of you post office for doing Red Talks. This is going to be the last one. So today, Carol Krasnell is going to talk to us about what we need to do here in this one.
Yes, I'm the last new postdoc. I like the combination of last and new. Anyway, this is a kind of work I was doing in the last month. I was in France, waiting for a new visa. I did this work with Laurent Fridel, who is now in École Normale Supérieure de Lyon. Well, in broad terms, the subject of this talk is field theory on compact non-commutative spaces. And mostly I'll be talking about the spheres, but this can be generalized to other non-commutative spaces. So summary roughly is, first I'll talk about non-commutative S2, which is known also as phi sphere. I'll show you why field theory on it is example of matrix model. For example, I'll show that the non-commutative version of field theory with action, this integral of some polynomial potential in phi, is given by the matrix model, whose action is 1 over n trace Vm. M is the usual Hermitian n-bind matrices, and 1 over n plays the role of non-commutativity parameter. So I'm going to show that. And from the point of view of usual old matrix models, this is sort of an interesting statement, because in usually matrix models, one is interested in Toft limit, where the action is n trace Vm. In that large n limit, one selects planar diagrams. However, so we're going to see that this unusual large n limit of very usual matrix model leads to field theory on S2, on the sphere. So we're going to see this, how this happens.
Is your field theory supposed to not have a kinetic term?
This is only for simplicity, really. I do not put any kinetic term there. But you can put it. It will still hold. It will still be true. The correspondence between matrix model and field theory on the sphere.
So if you don't put a kinetic term, but you maybe point to couple?
Yeah, it's more like... in the sense that this is the action. The integral is over S2.
Oh, it's not? The S2 is not?
No. Here, it's... No. This is commutative.
Oh, this is commutative?
Yeah.
Non-commutative version of that.
Yeah, non-commutative version of this field theory is that. Yeah, you're right that maybe it's bad to call this field theory, although it's... I mean, the action depends on the field, and you can define Euclidean version of it, meaning that you can calculate correlations using this action. But as I said, you can put a kinetic term in this action here, which will... There is a corresponding term in the matrix model version. It's not easy to write it, although I know how to write it, but it will still be true that matrix model in the large n limit leads to field theory on S2. Anyway, we're going to talk about that. And in the second part, which is going to be shorter, I'm going to describe non-commutative higher dimensional spheres. And this is a very strange thing. I'm going to show you how one can at least... I'm going to propose a definition of non-commutative higher dimensional spheres and show you how one can do field theory on higher dimensional non-commutative spheres. In particular, we're going to see that there is even stranger thing happens, that large n limit of field of matrix model with this action, 1 over n to some power, trace Em, large n limit of this model is related to higher dimensional spheres. So there is really lots of different large n limits of usual matrix models one can take, and they lead to field theories on different manifolds. We're going to see that. Okay, but first I want to give you motivations for doing that. So first, very general motivation for considering non-commutativity and compactness. The combination, as you know, gives you regularization of field theory. The two things separately, compactness and non-commutativity separately, do not give you finite theory. They do not make field theory finite. Compactness gives you infrared regularization. Non-commutativity smoothens out behavior in ultraviolet, but it doesn't make divergent field theory non-divergent. But the combination of two makes field theory finite, and it's very easy to see. Why is that? But from the point of view of regularization, this is the most natural regularization to consider, because this is regularization which preserves symmetries of underlying manifold. So it does for you what you usually get by putting field theory on the lattice, but this is sort of a lattice which is compatible with symmetries of the underlying manifold. So it's if such regularization is available, it's a very natural thing to do. So another motivation for looking, for example, at higher dimensional spheres, trying to make them non-commutative, is that higher dimensional sphere, for example, S4, is really compact analog of Minkowski four-dimensional spacetime. And as you'll see, my construction of non-commutative SNs uses heavily the fact that it's a homogeneous group manifold. And so Minkowski is also a homogeneous group manifold, so one can look at this construction of a non-commutative SNs as a first step toward fuzzy Minkowski space. But this was really not why I got interested in all this. My interest was motivated by quantum groups. I was trying to understand geometry behind quantum groups, which you know is a Frelimo for 2 plus 1 dimensional quantum gravity. And as you also probably know, in the case of classical groups, for example, SO3, there is a relation between representation theory of it and geometry of Euclidean three-dimensional space. In particular, this relation is best manifested by looking at the so-called 6J symbol, which is object constructed from 6 representations of SO3. With it, you can associate a tetrahedron in flat R3, whose edge lengths are just the spins which are arguments of the 6J symbol. So it turns out that the symmetries of these two objects agree, and moreover, asymptotics of 6J symbol for large spins is given by cosine of the sum of edge lengths times the dihedral angles here. So it's really like e to the I integral of trace of extrinsic curvature of embedding of the boundary of this tetrahedron into R3. And some of you, as probably know, this allows you to construct quantum version of Regia calculus. So it's the so-called Panzano-Regia model of 2 plus 1 dimensional quantum gravity. Anyway, I understand this relation, or it can be understood, this relation between geometry and representation theory, by relating representation theory to a certain field theory on S2. I'm not going to talk about this, but this can be understood like you relating it to field theory. And my hope was that the field theory on non-commutative S2 would be related to representation theory of quantum SU2. Well, what I know is that it's not the case for non-commutativity, which I'm considering here. The non-commutativity which I'm going to describe has nothing to do with quantum groups. It's a different type of non-commutativity. But I still hope that there is a modification of this non-commutativity which will lead to quantum groups. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about this. Yes?
Can I explain the first one again? The
why non-commutativity plus compactness is regularization? Actually, it's my next transparency. So. It's not next. Yeah, I'm sorry. You can wait. It's the one after next. I wanted to say that there is another motivation, and that this is really related to string theory. I'm not going to talk about relation to deep brains here, but it's not hard to see that the S2 I'm going to describe is really describing, it's really a geometry of D2 brain compactified on S2 with a spherically symmetric B field on it, and in alpha prime goes to zero limit. But as I said, it's not hard to see that this is true, but I'm not going to use it or discuss it here.
But they should deal with all groups that deal with it.
No, I was told that zero slope limit is named for alpha prime goes to zero.
Right.
Yeah, in that limit, yeah, in alpha prime goes to zero limits, you get on D brains, you get non-commutative geometry.
Yeah, from this way, in this
way, you get field theory on non-commutative. Here.
Presumably, you're also turning up some B
field. Yeah, I said that. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can say that. Well, I'm glad that something which I was doing, which before I came here, I was doing loop quantum gravity. And so, for example, looking at these quantum groups was motivated by my work in loop quantum gravity. And I'm glad that I'm now converging to something which is close to string theory. Okay. So why field theory and non-commutative compact space must be matrix model? So let me illustrate this on example when M, our manifold, is phase space of some system. Then this phase space can be quantized, so the coordinates become operators of some Hilbert space. When phase space is compact, the Hilbert space, its dimension, its volume of the phase space measured with respect to symplectic structure, divided by appropriate power 2 pi h bar.
I just want to make sure that I understand what you mean by phase space. So for something like quantum four, in fact, you would include x and p and both part phase space?
Yeah,
so
yeah. X and p.
X and
p. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which means that coordinates on this space become m by m matrices, operators, which means that fields, which were, you can think of as observables of this dynamical system, which you quantized, also become n by n matrices. So, and it's known how this works in practice for a very large class of examples when M is a coadjoint orbit of some compact Lie group, because then you can just quantize the coadjoint orbit, which is construction of irreducible representations. And then these operator axes are really operators in some irreducible representation. And this is the case of S2. I'm going to show you how this works in more details. But now, at the last, in the last part of my talk, I'm going to show you that there is a generalization for high-dimensional spheres. And from the point of view of this quantization of phase spaces, it's a little strange because Sn is not a phase space. So, let me talk about that in the last part.
So, capital N for the quantum form for the Landau problem?
Capital N for Landau problem. It's the
dimension.
Yeah, it's the dimension of Hilbert space of the system. Yeah. Yeah.
But in this way, it looks like, you know, it looks like, you know, when you call it a finite number of states, it's like quantum mechanics, right?
You see why it looks like quantum mechanics, because you really, you quantize phase space of some dynamical system. That's why it looks like quantum mechanics.
Right, but in quantum mechanical language, I would say, for example, the theory of, say, shared time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You view it as a theory of finite number of states at the given end, right, of the gender. And it is quantum, no, I mean, in this do correspond to comfort phase space.
Yes.
Right, but in this way, it is still a theory of finite number of
states. Of degrees of freedom.
Yeah. Finite number of states.
Yeah,
right?
Right. It's different, yeah.
So it's less than quantum mechanics, if you like, because in quantum mechanics.
You can have harmonic oscillator with infinite number of states, yeah.
Quantum mechanics on a finite space.
Right. But then it's like a slice. You can say that you took quantum mechanics, then you took, say, for example, only states fitting a given level, the general.
Right.
Okay, it would be an example of that.
But you see, if you quantize coordinates of some compact phase space, that you can say that basically you divide your phase space into cells, 2 pi h,
yeah.
And so that's why this explains, yes? Okay, thanks so much. Okay, so let me describe you. No. Yeah, that, I think that was it, yes. I think I answered. Okay.
Two questions. One question is, so far you talked about relativity, but you haven't really
introduced
non-relativity coordinates or anything like that.
No.
Is this supposed to be the same thing, or?
Yeah, this is non-commutative coordinates, in the sense that they become operators in some Hilbert space.
So, you thought it is a general statement that if you have a compact space and non-commutativity, the Hilbert space always gets
it's finite.
But you kind of have an example of that. That's why I'm wondering if you're in a torus, the envelope in a torus that has its energy, I know that doesn't change, including the finite size of that.
No, I think this is right, yeah. Yeah, I think what you're saying is probably right. This is because torus is strange. In the sense, if you... I think there is something strange happening with the volume of the torus if you measure it in respect to symplectic structure.
Is it?
Yeah? It's the same thing?
Physically finite volumes, non-commutative animal theory with some physical non-commutative parameter, and you can divide it intuitively by dimensionality, you can divide the area by the length scale.
And still you're saying that...
So I think I also heard that you can build on a flat space, but... Well,
Well, maybe I was being too general then. I thought that this explains why it's always true. But if you have a counterexample,
I'm more curious when you heard that because I want to put it up to
you. But your counterexample is that you're not talking about the phase space, you're talking about the space space.
No, torus. Torus is a phase space.
Is the torus you're talking about is not a phase space?
No.
It's the space that you're looking at.
Space
includes momentum
and precision. No, but sometimes when you do it with theory. So I don't care at the end of the day if I can with the entropy of the theory. If the degree of the extreme gets cut off, the entropy has to cut off as time. And that's what he's saying. And what I'm saying is that if you do have no theory on the torus, that does not happen. That the entropy of the non-commutative and the commutative is exactly the same, including compactification effects.
Well, maybe.
So
maybe.
Obviously, high temperature is.
Yeah, but that doesn't contradict anything. Mm-hmm. You don't have a finite space.
No, in the case you have compact phase space, that's my example. Compact phase space, meaning that if you measure volume of your phase space using the symplectic structure on that phase space, it's finite. No, no, it's a dimensional Hilbert space. Yeah, maybe.
You still have momentum, that means go up.
Right.
That means
space is
infinite.
That's right. That doesn't agree with that.
It does not contradict what I said.
If the space is compact.
It's compact.
Oh, you know that if the space is compact.
No.
The whole space.
I'm sorry. I missed it.
Okay. So let me describe non-commutative S2. It's very easy thing to do. Coordinates. It's convenient to think of S2 as sitting inside R3. Then coordinates are just xi's, such that sum of squares is equal to 1. So to make a non-commutative S2, let me convert these coordinates into operators, which act in the irreducible representation n over 2. So I'm just taking generators of my Lie algebra and dividing them by the square root of the Casimir. So by dividing them, I guarantee that the sum of squares is still equal to 1. Then you can also see that the commutator of these two axes has 1 over n, roughly, and it's so that in the large n limit, the coordinates become commutative. And this is roughly how you get the fuzzy sphere. So to do field theory on it, one would have to decompose field into spherical polynomials, into sort of the Fourier mode decomposition of the field. Just for convention, I'm normalizing my spherical polynomials in this way, and I'm choosing the basis such the complex conjugation of spherical polynomial is spherical polynomial for minus m. well, this will be important later. So polynomials also will become operators because my x's become operators, so polynomials will also become operators in this Vn over 2 space. The prescription for writing down the action of field theory is to replace integral by 1 over n plus 1 trace. And so then you can write down non-commutative analog of your commutative action and do field theory. By doing field theory, I mean you can do path integrals, integrating over the Fourier coefficients. Well, but in practice, to do that, you need to know the operators which correspond to spherical polynomials. And from what I said, it's not so. This is good, but this is not enough to determine spherical polynomials as operators because there are some operator ordering ambiguities. So, let me describe you how you can construct the spherical polynomials, the explicit expressions for the spherical polynomials as operators. So this is what is here. Actually, what I'm describing here, I didn't see in literature, which I saw in non-commutative S2. So I don't know if it's new or not. But anyway, we invented this ourselves. So what you, to determine this operators which correspond to spherical polynomials, let me use a chain of isomorphisms. So let me take space of endomorphisms of Vn over 2. It's isomorphic to Vn over 2, Vn over 2 dual, which is isomorphic to Vn over 2, Vn over 2. And then using rule of addition of angular momenta, it's just the sum of irreducible representation spaces, Vl, where L runs from 0 to n. So under this isomorphism, a vector from this VL space, from any one of these VL spaces, can be thought of as an operator in this space, so as n plus 1 by n plus 1 matrix. But now recall that irreducible representations can be realized in terms of functions on this sphere. In particular, for example, if you realize them by some left or right action of the group, the representation splits into irreducibles, and for example, the basis in the irreducible space VL is given by these spherical polynomials. So this means that to every function, to every element of the basis, you can associate a matrix in this space. And so I'm going to describe this matrix. This matrix is of course given. So the isomorphism here is given by 3J symbols, by Clebertorian coefficients. And so it's very easy to see what this matrix is. So to a polynomial like that, the associated matrix is basically the Clebsch-Gordan coefficient from n over 2 dual to L representation. And these ij indices are just matrix indices of this operator. I hope you remember what this 3J symbol is. This is to recall what 3J symbol is. Yeah, I put here n plus square root of n plus 1 because I can do it. I didn't tell you how I normalized my Clebsch-Gordans yet, but it's going to be convenient to have it. So in graphic notation, I'm representing the matrix now, which is operator version of my spherical polynomial by trivalent vertex. So, and you can see that there is U1 charge going. So all the edges are oriented, and there is U1 charge going in here, out here, and in here. The Hermitian conjugation of this operator is equivalent to reversing orientations on all the edges. You can show that the properties. So basically, I gave a definition. So let me say that this is definition of these operators. Now you can show the properties of them. They have right properties under Hermitian conjugation. Namely, you get the analog of those properties which I chose for my spherical polynomials. Then you can calculate. This is the analog of integral of two spherical polynomials. So this is analog of orthogonality condition. Well, you can see roughly how the calculation goes. You see that it's very convenient to do these calculations in the graphical notation because so my theta really has so its indices LM correspond to one of the edges. They label one of the edges of the 3J symbol, and then you just stick all these The representation which sits here is n over 2. So you combine representations preserving orientation in the way compatible with orientation of edges. So to get orthogonality relation, which was true for spherical polynomials, I choose this theta symbol, which is just a product of two 3J symbols to be one. It's a convenient normalization. Well, so this is prescription, finally. Now I have to show it looks like it's a different quantization. So first of all, it's a quantization of polynomials on the sphere, because I made polynomials into operators. Now I have to show you that this is the same quantization as I was talking before, when I made axis to be non-commutative. So to do that, we really have to recall that axes are really just thetas for L is equal to 1. This was true classically, so we can just so we should expect that the commutator of two thetas will be proportional to another theta, and there will be this factor of 1 over square root of Casimir sitting there. And well, you can calculate this, and this is the actual calculation, which probably you don't have to follow. What's important here is that the commutator of two thetas, the properties of the commutator is encoded in 6J symbol. So the 6J symbol becomes a really important object. It's the commutator of, we'll see that it's basically, it encodes this usual 6J symbol of representation theory of SO3 encodes the product, the new product of on this non-commutative space. I hope I'll be able to say that a bit more. So using that, you can check indeed that this commutator is what you expected. So that the quantization which I gave, which makes polynomials into operators, is indeed the quantization which you want it to be. Because for polynomials of degree 1, which are just coordinates, you get the right commutation relation of coordinates. Well, it's a good question. Actually, if you unique up to, under what conditions? It's known, for example, that if you have a phase space, and if you want to quantize this phase space in the sense of deformation quantization, if you want to get a star product, then this star product is unique modulus on diffeomorphisms on this phase space. Yeah, basically, I solve this problem by giving explicit prescription for all polynomials. This is the particular quantization.
Are you reproducing the definition?
The definitions of other people, which I saw, was this definition with axis, that you just make axes to be non-commutative by making them operators in some irreducible representation. But actually, I never saw how people make more complicated operators on the sphere. I don't know, maybe I don't know literature, but... Yeah, I saw them. Their definition was my first definition here. Anyway, well, I don't think what I described is something new. Probably it's known somewhere, because it's really unique way. I mean, it's very natural from the point of view of representation theory way to talk about these operators. Well, I talked about half an hour. Maybe I should say something about star product now, which it's a little bit aside from my talk, so it's not directly related, but I cannot help telling you about this because it's just really nice. So I'm going to show you how the non-commutative sphere I described is related to deformation quantization. So just to remind you a few things about star product, if you get algebra functions on some Poisson manifold, star product is a new product on this algebra functions, which is really a product on the algebra of formal power series in H-bar. And the conditions on this star product are that it's associative and it starts with the usual product, and the first term is anti-symmetric, and it's really the Poisson bracket. Under these conditions, this product is unique. It can be shown to be unique. Example is, of course, usual Moyle product, when the commutator is a constant anti-symmetric matrix theta. So Kantsevich gave explicit construction of this star product for any Poisson bracket. And actually, the star product can be shown to be to arise from topological string theory, where topological means that it's real alpha prime goes to zero string theory. And actually, it was shown by Laurent Fidel almost after Kantsevich paper, but he didn't publish it, which was very stupid. And it was shown in 1999 by Katanau and Felder that Kantsevich star product is related to string theory. And the way it's related is that really you take two operators and you compute their expectation, their correlation function, and then you take the points, you take the limit when the two points coincide, and you get the star product. Well, what's the relation to star product and these fuzzies here? So again, what I've done, I described how to promote fields, square integrable fields on the sphere into operators. Now you can define star product in such a way that under this map, the image, the operator image of this star product is the operator product here. So it gives you some non-commutative, obviously, but associative product in the space of functions on S2. Now, I want to show that this is really the star product, up to some subtleties. So more precisely, usual star product acts in the space of symbols of operators. For example, for Moyle product, the symbols of operators are really Fourier transformation.
Sorry, but did you define it like that? But the
yes.
It's not an injection mapping from the L2 from that 5 or 5 hat.
I mean, if it covers all of?
No, if there are, would you think that going to zero?
No, I don't think so. You see, I defined it by decomposing this into Fourier modes, and then all Fourier modes go to particular operators here.
But n is just a fixed number? It's not all n.
Oh, sorry, that's what you mean. Yeah, you're exactly right. This is what is shown here. So the modes with L too high, with L greater than n, they go to zero. They do not correspond to.
Because you don't say what happens after the higher.
This is actually the subtlety I'm going to talk about, because so maybe you can wait until the second transparency. Basically, the formal power series which defines the star product stops if okay, let me say that. So the star product is usually defined in the space of symbols of operators. So the symbol of operator in this case you can define as let me give you a definition of the symbol. It's a trace of it's a trace of operator analog of delta function with phi, with the operator phi. Here is the operator analog of delta function. Basically what this means is that the symbol is, if operator can be decomposed into the modes like this, then the symbol is just the usual field which you would write with these Fourier modes. But you are not allowed to consider Fourier modes with L greater than N. So this is the symbol. So star product really acts in the space of symbols in this space, in the space of functions which do not contain Fourier modes with L greater than N. Okay, and you can check that explicitly that the star product, which with the definition I gave, the first order term in 1 over n is really the Poisson bracket, usual Poisson bracket in the sense of R3. And I didn't check other terms, but you can expect that this is the same star product as the one which would come from deformation quantization. with this Poisson structure. You can say that because that star product is fixed by the conditions that its first order term in H bar is the usual Poisson bracket. Well, I'm not interested in proving that this is the same star product as the deformation quantization star product. I just wanted to check is that the first order in H bar is the same. You also see that 1 over n plays the role of H bar here. So you see that because in the space, so my space of symbols of operators has a property that there will be some nth derivative of it, of the function in that space will vanish. So this means that this expansion in 1 over n stops in this space, in the space of symbols. Well, just another fact. There is another nice formula for the star product using operators. It's just a curiosity. Okay. Let's go on. So let me talk a little bit more about field theory and matrix relation to matrix model. So here I want to show that I want to compare a non-commutative version and see in large n limit what this non-commutative version of field theory goes to. So you can I'm comparing non-commutative version and commutative field theory by comparing mode expansions, by comparing actions which depend on Fourier coefficients. So for example, you can find the action in terms of Fourier coefficients, and here I use the fact that integral of 3 thetas is a 3J symbol times 3J symbol with bunch of zeros as arguments. This guy here is the integral of 3 of thetas. Now, non-commutative version. So you take the action like this. This is mode expansion of the field. And then this is what action in terms of mode expansion looks like. You see that this object here, it comes from, it's a trace of 3 thetas, exactly. Remember, in my graphic notation, theta is, so it has 3 legs, with one of the legs labeled by LM, and there is n over 2 representation labeling other 2 legs. So this is really a trace of 3 thetas. And it can be shown that, first of all, this object is just a 3J symbol times the 6J symbol. That's very easy to show. But then, it's a little bit more complicated, but then it can be shown that the limit of 6J symbol times square root of dimension is really this 3J symbol with m's being 0 here. Yes.
And you're comparing with the theory where, you know,
it's finite. Right?
So you're implying that it's a limit of infinite number of infinite m or infinite
m. First of all, I'm saying that this action in terms of Fourier modes goes into the action in terms of Fourier modes of the non-commutative field theory. I'm just saying that, in the n goes to infinity limit. Your question is what happens, so how the number of degrees of freedom gets increased, right?
Well, because in field theory, you know that it's infinite, right?
Yes, but you can see how explicitly it gets increased. When L, the degrees of freedom, so the degrees of freedom in this finite n theory, these Fourier coefficients. And when n goes to infinity, L is allowed to take greater values. So basically, just increase the number of these Fourier coefficients until you get infinite number of Fourier modes. Yes. 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 Large n limit of this theory here is that theory there. Well,
Is that the statement?
Yes. Again, the statement, commutative limit of non-commutative.
So it sounds to me like you start with a string of thought and you do not commutatize it.
Yes.
A string of water.
What does it mean, non-commutatize it? By large.
You just take two fields and
yes.
Multiply, well, instead of taking fields and multiplying or ordering,
mm-hmm.
Yes. In other words, take the manifold which is building on and change the manifold to non-commutative one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it seems to me that the bottom theory.
Yeah, this is non-commutative theory.
Now,
yeah, you get commutative. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I was showing here. Good. Okay. So, what I just shown or gave a sketch of the proof is that theory whose action is given by 1 over n plus 1 trace of some polynomial in M's, where M are just the usual Hermitian matrices. Large N limit of this theory is field theory on S2. And the explicit correlation between field here and matrices here is this, where my delta is an operator analog of delta function. So it's a limit of the symbol of this operator, phi. Well, I can be even a little bit more precise. You can see how, you can see by comparing Feynman diagrams of matrix model and this non-commutative field theory and this here, you can see what's the relation between Feynman diagrams of both. For example, the Feynman rules of matrix model, the usual matrix model with this action, are for every H you have a propagator, which is just two lines oriented in opposite direction, and the vertex is this guy. So for example, for this diagram, for this planar diagram, by using this relation here, which is just true, its effect, so its relation, that bunch of delta can be represented as a sum over product of three J symbols. You can decompose it.
Can I ask a trivial question?
Yes.
The way you scale N is different from the usual literature, right?
Yes. Because in usual,
right.
You have
n
times the trace.
Instead of 1 over n.
Yeah.
But if you have this 1 over n here, now and you scale n squared by n going to m squared,
mm-hmm.
Then the higher and the higher terms become more and more important. Right? The m cubed term and the m fourth term become more important.
Yeah.
So then why
mm-hmm.
can you just control this all and over, you know, just keep the, replace the polynomial by the term of the highest degree? I mean, the lower and lower terms
it seems no, because the field theory you're led to, it has all these interactions. It has, for example, if you had m cubed term, then in the field theory you'll have phi cubed interaction.
But when you count the diagrams are like a hook, right?
This is not the usual tough limit, right?
So you
because
don't have all the
no, definitely not.
You are very
and right, if it cannot be true because I'm led to field theory, and we know that in field theory you have
mm-hmm.
all possible diagrams, so you cannot have just planar diagrams.
Mm-hmm. So can you characterize what these diagrams are? Or is this what you're trying to do?
All possible diagrams.
No, but some of them must be less important than others because the terms, you know, for things with cubic interaction are less important than things with polynomial interaction.
I wasn't interested in that.
No, it's not a question of whether you're interested.
Well,
theory,
yeah, I understand that
yeah.
It's the right question to ask, but
yeah.
I don't know the answer
to
it.
The limit of RHN, you say, is equivalent to the field theory with all these terms in it, so it can't have some of the
vertices
pressing out.
But surely, if you
destroy
it to the finite diagram, you see that.
But the finite diagram, there must be something in
that press.
But
that's a process. That suppresses what? Yeah, it was exactly true. Yeah, h bar is 1 over n. I told you that limit of, I mean, limit of this action is related to field theory on S2. If you put some other, for example, if you don't put n here, it will not be true that the large n limit will be related to some field theory on S2.
Mm-hmm.
I agree this is the right question, but well. So here I just wanted to show you how one diagram of matrix model is really sum of diagrams of my non-commutative field theory or non-commutative S2. And this is how it goes. Basically, you use this relation, and then just one diagram becomes a sum of diagrams. No. This is for finite n. Just wanted to see how exactly the usual Feynman diagram of matrix model, this one, becomes what it corresponds to in the Feynman diagrams in the field theory or non-commutative theorem.
Yes.
Yeah, there are certainly diagrams which are less important on the on here, but I didn't know what they are. Okay, now I want to talk about generalization to higher dimensions. And, well, I have 15 minutes on that. So, first let me state a fact, which is just true, and then I'll try to say that why this fact means that you can have non-commutative higher dimensional spheres. So the fact is that, so first, the idea is the same. You can, to make a field an operator, you decompose it into spherical harmonics, and then I'm using the same map, so I'm using this isomorphism, that endomorphism of Vn is Vn tensor Vn, which I split into irreducible representations, which means that, yeah, first of all, I didn't tell you, there are different for the case of SO n plus 1, which is of relevance for Sn, there are different representations of SO n plus 1. The ones which are realized in terms of spherical polynomials are the so-called type 1 representations. They're very special ones, but there are also other ones. It happens that if you tensor these type 1 representations, not only you get these type 1 representations, which are analog sort of representations of SU2, but you also get others, and this is what is represented here. You get this leftover of representations. This is going to be important. I mean, something for Sn, something doesn't work, which works for S2. And this is why.
Sorry, you said the spherical harmonics. The ordering spherical harmonics, are they?
Yeah, they are type 1.
So they're not complete, you're saying, on the
end? I'm saying that in the tensor product, so you're saying if you just multiply the spherical harmonics. Yeah. Well, it will certainly make life easier if, so you're saying that in the tensor product of two representation like that, there is nothing else except the same representations. Well, that's even better. But I think it's not true. Even by the statement is that
clearly, if you take two and you take a product, you can decompose it into symmetric traces.
Yeah, and the usual product of these polynomials is analog of tensoring them in terms of representation theory, tensoring them. But of this leftover, I'm just saying that there can be something else, and I don't know what this is. So, in particular, it can be nothing here. So, but I, for some reason, I. No, there are only finite dimensional representations for SON here, but for type 1 representations, yeah, the ones which are related to spherical polynomials are these type 1 representations, spherical polynomials, the spherical harmonics. Well, I don't know, I really thought that there is something else here, but if not, it... So you think there is nothing else there?
I mean, isn't that also what you write in your first line? You write that any function can be expanded.
Right.
And the product is pure.
Well, okay. I'm a little bit still confused, though. But this isomorphism means that the vector from any of these spaces can be made, again, an operator.
Excuse me, are you throwing away high modes?
Yes. But I was also throwing them away for S2. So I'm trying to generalize.
It might be true that the things left over can throw away something. What am I throwing away? Well, he throws away high L values.
So if I multiply two, I'm multiplying. It's good enough because these are homogeneous polynomials of degree n. So if you multiply two of them, you get not more than homogeneous polynomial of degree 2n. So it should be true enough. Okay, then, well, maybe then it's much better than I thought. Well, what I was going to say on the next transparency is this, the problem with this, actually. Okay, I'm still confused. But anyway, the idea was that use this isomorphism to make these polynomials into operators, as we did for S2. Then, so this isomorphism is again given by Clebsch-Gordons. So the claim is again that if you write down the action, 1 over dimension of this representation n, times trace of some polynomial, then it again goes into the integral of the sphere, over sphere Sn. So the large n limit of this action is field theory on Sn. And really, the proof is very much like for the case of S2. Basically, there are the facts which are true for S2 are also true. Some facts are also true for these type 1 representations of Son plus 1. So, but this is just fact, which means that you can define this as non-commutative version of this field theory. So you can say that you have non-commutative Sn, and this is field theory, and this is what corresponds to this action. But the problem is that there is, in the usual sense, there is no non-commutative Sn, because Sn is not naturally Poisson manifold, so you cannot naturally quantize it. So my understanding of why that thing on the previous transparency works was that you can think that Sn is sitting inside the coadjoint orbit. There is coadjoint orbit corresponding to these type 1 representations. It's not Sn, definitely, because first of all, it's even dimensional. Yeah, definitely, yes. And Sn is sitting inside it in some way. For example, for... Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. I mean, in general, what coadjoint orbit is? Okay, representations are characterized by highest weights. So these are, you can think about some vectors in the Lie algebra. You can, given vector in the Lie algebra, you can act on it by a group, and you get an orbit. So taking the highest weight, which corresponds to these type 1 representations, and I can even write down explicitly what that highest weight is, if you're interested. But, I mean, in the particular choice of basis, which... it will not tell you anything. So you get a coadjoint orbit to any irreducible representation of Lie groups. There is one-to-one correspondence between irreducible representations of coadjoint orbits. So to these type 1 representations, there are corresponding coadjoint orbits. You seem to be confused by something.
Can I just say it once more? You take the highest weight, and then you want to act with a group?
With a group, and you get some... surface in the Lie algebra, and this is the coadjoint orbit. Well, this Sn is not a coadjoint orbit, but it sits inside it. But you can quantize coadjoint orbit, and so this, the quantization of coadjoint orbit is really, it is related to, it gives you these type 1 representations. So, again, my understanding of what was on the previous transparency was that you can think of functions on Sn as some functions on the coadjoint orbit which do not depend on some coordinates on the coadjoint orbit. Coadjoint orbit will have larger dimension than the sphere. Sphere will just sit there. So while you can you can quantize the coadjoint orbit, but the space of functions which do not depend on some coordinates will not be closed under the Poisson bracket. You may have, by taking Poisson bracket of two functions which are functions on Sn, you may get something which is not a function on Sn anymore. Which will mean that under this quantization, the algebra functions is not closed. And this is what...
I still don't understand the quadrant, but let's take SOM, you have the rotation, that's what you
yes.
Mm-hmm. So just take the, so take some element of the loop, so
yes.
Take the matrix.
Mm-hmm. Yes. First let's diagonalize it.
First
and
diagonalize.
Okay. Then
we add to the loop on that. And what is that object? That's not, if it's not Sn, what is it?
By diagonalizing there, for example, what can happen? There will be blocks sitting on the diagonal. For example, there can be all blocks, and
well,
this is the.
Blocks, it's just diagonal, right?
I mean, you cannot. It's anti-symmetric. Take if you take Lie algebra element,
yes.
These are anti-symmetric matrices. You can still diagonalize them, and diagonal means that the blocks. Yeah, there can be all generic element will have all blocks. So if you act on this generic element by the action of the group, you'll have one coadjoint orbit. But these type 1 representations correspond to elements which have only one block here. So these are elements, the highest weight which corresponds to them.
Just tell us for the simple case of say O3, what is it?
For SO3?
Yeah.
For SO3, there is no distinction between type 1. For SO4, okay, SO4 can be represented as S. Roughly it's that, right? Modulus some Z2s. So representations of SO4 are pairs of spins. They're labeled by pairs of spins. So you have some G, K. It's a representation of SO4. These type 1 representations of SO4 are the ones for which this spin is equal to this spin. So these type 1 representations are labeled only by one parameter. And it's the case in the case of SO4. Yeah. But yeah. You get, for example, one. They are type ones. All spherical harmonics are type ones. No way. Well, I'm confused.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, Sn plus 1, yeah.
And in this way, what the situation is that you choose a representation function where this second one doesn't act, right? So you choose an object, I mean, for your representation, for example, not lower case, it's fundamental in SUM. You're choosing, you know, one somewhere and zero otherwise. And you know that SUM minus 1 doesn't act, right? And it would be just representation for the sphere, right? Because if you take a ratio of two neighboring SUM, it would be just a sphere.
No, but you're describing action. You in this construction, which you're describing.
But then it creates in what sense? It closed if you will consider only such objects. It will be closed on this given SM, on not for every given object, but only for the one where SUM minus 1 do not act, right?
Well, you're describing the construction of the sphere. So SOM plus 1 acts in RN plus 1.
Yeah. Well,
and then acting on the vector, you get...
Way, classification, right? I don't know, type 1 or type 1 should correspond to this, right? Because if you are choosing an object which some group doesn't act, this one doesn't act, then of course it will be closed on this one.
Well, I'm still confused by this multiplication of spherical polynomials. It looks like,
okay,
in terms of...
In this way, if you are choosing, say, one fundamental and another fundamental, one you can put in the position, the one and all zero, but you cannot do it with two, right? I mean, if you are taking two different fundamentals, then simultaneously you would not put them in such a way that previous group doesn't have, right?
I don't see what you're saying.
No,
sorry.
So in this way, if you're multiplying two fields, it's like taking one
representation and the other.
Another one. And but if they both be re-entered into the same way, then it would be okay, right? Because re-entered in a sense that SUN minus 1 doesn't affect on both. And if it's not the case, then of course, everyone you can find out a particular direction, but not for both of them simultaneously.
I still don't see it, yeah. Because do you see it? Or no? Yeah, okay, maybe. Yeah. Let me try to finish. I think still... So, first of all, this example shows that there is indeed something else in tensor product, the first simple representation. There is not something non-simple. So what I wrote on the previous transparency was true. And I think this is still... This was explanation why there is something... why there is that leftover in the tensor product, and I was trying to explain why you can still quantize the SN. Well, so again, the idea of this quantization, of this making SN non-commutative, is to think of SN as sitting inside this coadjoint orbit. But so then you can quantize functions on SN, but the algebra functions will not be closed, meaning that if you take two functions, their product is not anymore of the type you started with. Which means that from the point of view of non-commutative geometry, this means that there is no non-commutative SN, because the usual non-commutative space is defined as algebra functions, which is closed, and so on. So this is not non-commutative space of the usual type. But what I was trying to say is that you can still do field theory on it, and I demonstrated that. You can write down non-commutative analog of the action, and that action will go in the large N limit to the commutative one. When n is equal to 2? Yes. For S2, yes. Yes. But no other spheres. Basically, because there is no natural Poisson's. As larger as n's are not Poisson manifolds, with Poisson structure being invariant under SON plus 1. So there is no invariant Poisson's. There is no natural Poisson structure on SN, while S2 is a symplectic manifold. For example, yeah, this one which I described. I mean, it's a strange one. Yeah, so it's not the Poisson structure on SN because the commutator will not be anymore a function on SN. I don't know of any. Yeah, basically, you cannot do it. But it seems to me that you can do field theory. So there is some, I don't know, maybe one can have a more general definition of non-commutative spaces, which allows for this example. Well, again, this is work in progress, and I would like to know more about this, so I'm still trying to work out the details here. Okay, and almost the last transparency. So this is relation to matrix models. So... Yeah, between the tetas, the commutator will not be a teta anymore. That's the problem there. And basically, one would have to understand what is the commutator. Okay, again, what I know is true is this. So this is something true. So if you write down the action, so this is another matrix model. So if you write down this action where PM are matrices projected on simple representations, meaning matrices which are decomposable only in these type 1 representations, so then I know that this action goes to the action of field theory on SN. And this projection is important because I also know that if you don't put this projection here, then what you get is a field theory on the coadjoint orbit. So this is this projector which projects you to the sphere. So, but it's interesting because the dimension of this representation N in, so my small n, remember, it's the thing which sits in SON. So dimension n, dimension of this nth representation of this group grows as n to the n, roughly, or to the n minus 1. This means that there are lots of different limits of the usual matrix models, depending on what power you put in front of the trace. And these different limits lead to field theories and different manifolds of different dimensions. For example, you can get spheres. If you don't put any projection, you get coadjoint orbits. If you put projections, you get to the spheres. this is just as a curiosity, a very interesting fact. The usual Tuft limit, you see, it's n is equal to zero, formally, because you need n sitting in front of the trace. Okay, this is almost it. Now
this projection, is it consistent with the graph?
Yes. Oh, basically, after you multiply things, you have to project them. Because after you multiply them, you get something else. You get this leftover other representations. Actually, you never do it by hand. In all these diagrams, basically, you just multiply these thetas. You just multiply them inside the trace. And you don't do any projections inside the trace. You just multiply them. I was just saying that you can deal only with fields in this model, fields which are decomposable into these thetas, and not any Hermitian matrix is decomposable in thetas. It's only Hermitian matrices with some special properties, and my projector projects to the space of Hermitian matrices with these properties. Okay, so it's clear that I don't understand as well as I should this non-commutativity high-dimensional series, and I think if I don't work on it, somebody should do it, because it seems interesting. Well, this other interesting thing to do is, can one do gauge theory on this SNs? For example, even the case of S2, which is completely understood, is very interesting, because other different U1 bundles on this non-commutative S2. I don't think people know the answer to that. And I would be mostly interested in relation to quantum S2. And again, I hope that there is some modification of this non-commutative S2 such that field theory on it would be related to representation theory of quantum S2. Okay, thanks. Maybe I understand it. Actually, these are not the spherical harmonics are not just homogeneous polynomials. They're harmonic homogeneous polynomials, meaning satisfying Laplace equation. Maybe that's why. If you multiply two things satisfying Laplace equation, you don't get the solution to Laplace equation. I think that's the answer to the equation.
No, I think if you multiply spherical harmonics, you get something that you can expand in spherical harmonics. Spherical. You don't get the full product of the representation.
For me, spherical harmonics are homogeneous harmonic polynomials. Harmonic meaning satisfying Laplace equation. So the guys I was talking about here, my thetas, are not just homogeneous polynomials. They're homogeneous harmonic polynomials.
But it still doesn't hit the full product on the representation. In the case of the same one, if you only get something inside the symmetric.
I still don't understand. Maybe you should explain that to me. But I went to understand. I. So do you understand?
There is extra stuff in the in the product of representations, and that does not contradict the statement that. And it's also true that product of spherical harmonics
is
can be expanded
by spherical harmonics.
Spherical harmonics. But those two things do not contradict each other.
Why not?
Because nobody told you that. Suppose you take five. Suppose you take two spherical harmonics, phi 1 and phi 2,
mm-hmm.
and they correspond to representations R1 and R2. So then phi 1 times phi 2 will then transform in the tensor product of these two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily that it fills out everything. I mean,
what you're trying to say is that you can't make all of the representations by doing this tensoring?
I'm saying that suppose you write
Weinstein, I think it would probably.
No, but
listen, define this. How you allow it.
No, I don't think.
No, that's another discussion. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
So I'm just. Suppose. Okay, you expand this, the product of the two representations, you expand into irreducibles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the statement would be that this product transforms in these, but not necessarily all of them. Mm-hmm. Nobody would tell you that you get all. You. Okay, suppose it was the same function.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose it was the same function. So then you're obviously going to get something in the symmetric product.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but the,
so the extra stuff.
The difference with SE2 is that you can build everything by using
spin
a half
function. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the difference. No, actually, you use an integer spin.
This is what you're saying is that multiplication of functions
in SU2 you
does not correspond to Kensing representations.
You don't get extra stuff.
In SU2, because
there is
when
no
you
extra stuff.
Multiply two integer representations,
there is no extra
you're only going to get other integers. But
it's not a question of integers. For SU2, there is only one type of representations.
No, but it's a question of. If for SU2, your type 1 is the same as
all
integer. No, it's not
okay,
the spin
right,
half.
Right, sorry.
Half.
Yeah, it's integers.
Yeah,
it's the integer. But in higher SOs, there would be more. Type 1 is a smaller class. Then you can't say it's all integers.
Oh, yeah, it's not just like half of the representation.
You see.
Right, it's not something that closes on its itself.
No.
I mean, to take an
if you don't talk about SC2, if you talk about SOs only, then for SO3, for SO3, all representations are type
SO3,
1.
Right, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But for higher ones, for high SOs, there are other representations.
Yes. Definitely.
Okay.
But it's just that there is extra stuff and there is no contradiction.
Right.
So
you're
not saying.
I think the point was simply that we were not getting was that this class that you called the thetas.
Mm-hmm.
Subclass of all the sort of the harmonics.
It doesn't include all of them.
You said before that it was
no. Harmonic.
Only the ones, for example, in SO4 that had the same spin on either side. Like, for example, you said over there, but if you have.
Oh, but these are all spherical harmonics.
Yeah, they're all spherical.
Yeah. And then the
it's known
the
that L2 function on SN can be decomposed. I mean, they form a complete basis.
The statement would then be that if you multiply those two, you get other stuff than those that have that are type 1.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take the spherical harmonics as functions and
multiply them as
you're
functions,
you're only going to hit
the
other type 1.
Yes.
I mean, nobody says that you should get into everything, right? I mean, you understand what I mean?
Yeah. The product of functions on this here is a function of the series.
I mean,
suppose
we write it out these functions. So there are, let's say, then phi m and phi n. And so m goes from 1 to the dimension of the dimension of the first representation, and n goes from 1 to the dimension of the second representation.
Mm-hmm.
But now you're not going to get, you might think now that you get dimension of R1 times dimension of R2 independent numbers out of this. But of course you don't. You're not.
Yeah.
Because some of them might be the same.
Well,
for instance,
example,
if it's the same.
This is symmetric,
yeah,
so
exactly. You're never going to hit
the
anti-symmetric stuff. Right. So even though there is extra stuff, you're never going to hit it with a larger time spherical harmonics. So there is no contradiction between anything.
Mm-hmm.
No. You have extra stuff, but that does not mean that. But the spherical harmonics is a complete basis. But still, when you multiply the representations, you get extra stuff.
If any of the functions in the expanding have spherical harmonics, and you multiply those functions,
Well, that's usually the statement
that
they're right.
That's
exactly the
statement.
And the point is just another statement. The point is just another statement that the representation is a sensor product.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can have other things. So
that's true.
Okay.
Well, it was confusing.
It was just, I think, the language was confusing rather than the actual.
Well, it was confusing for me also. Is it switched off now?
It's in the fusion of two type 1, you get some other one. Left.
Right. You mean the project is not close to the project? No, it's not close to the project.
function I have an operator, I have a mouse. Now I have also product in the